I'm visiting today with Mark Foss. He's the son of a pioneer architect, Magnus Foss, and he's the chairman of the board of the Foss Associates in Architectural Engineering and Interiors of Fargo and Moorhead. One of the reasons I'm sure that you, Mark, were included in this oral history program is the fact that your organization has been for many, many years one of the premier, one of the leading architecturals and designers in the upper Midwest. Okay. And that's certainly true.
Yes, and we've certainly been in existence a long time also.
Were you, was your father a upper Midwest? Was he a Minnesotan?
Yes, he was born in Winona, Minnesota, when my grandfather started the firm, although back then was more contractor related. It was kind of a contract design firm. Started in 1898.
In
18, somewhere, that's where we say my father was born in 1896.
And
some of the early buildings they did, designed and built, were railroad passenger stations or railroad terminal buildings, which we, of course, you don't see any of those new ones going up anymore.
And then did he move his organization to Moorhead or to Fargo?
Oh, there's a lot of stops in between there. We didn't move to Moorhead till 1946, but my grandfather, A.H., Andrew H. Foss, started the firm in Winona, then he moved to Elbow Lake, Minnesota. And it was kind of where my father grew up primarily. He was just 2 years old when they moved there. Then they moved to St. Cloud, Minnesota, in 1914, 1916, somewhere in there. And my father joined a firm and was Foss and Foss, father and son back then, of course. And then my father went in World War I, came back to the firm, and my grandfather, Andrew H., died quite unexpectedly in 1921 at a comparatively young age. So then my father moved to Minneapolis in about 24, I mean, I get the exact years down, and went into a partnership with a man named Prince. And that partnership lasted 2 years. And then he went into partnership with a man named Jensen, who was Jensen and Foss. And that went on a couple of years. Then in 1928, my father moved to Fergus Falls. Although I was born in Minneapolis in 27, I grew up in Fergus Falls. And in Fergus Falls, he went into partnership with a man named Einar Broughton, who was Broughton and Foss. And that went on until, because Mr. Broughton had a drinking problem, went on until 1936. Then my father went on his own and formed the firm name was Foss and Company. And we didn't move till Moorhead then, until after World War II.
Was your father's father an immigrant? Did he?
Oh, yes. Born in Norway, went to University of Christiana, and I think that's how the name of it, and then came to the United States in 1893, located in Grand Forks.
And was the name spelled F-O-S-S? Or was it F-O-S-S-E? Or
F-O-S-S-E-N, I think.
I see.
Again, I don't have a lot of that back. I mean, I have it written down, but I think that's, as I remember, that's how it was written. They changed it in the United States.
Did your father have a formalized university training in architecture?
No, my father only went to a Chicago business school or technical school from like 1914 to 16 or somewhere in that area, but just a two-year.
So his technical training was on the job, so to speak.
Right, yes. Primarily. He would have probably gone longer, but World War I came and he was there.
Where did you go to college or university?
I went to University of North Dakota. I'm a civil engineering, bachelor's degree and master's degree in civil engineering.
I see.
As you recall, I have an older brother that was in the firm before I was. M.O. Foss Jr., who's now retired, of course.
I see. There was a group of men who were kind of leaders and originators in informalized architecture. I'm thinking of Harold Kirk. I'm thinking of Gilbert Horton. He was in Jamestown, I think.
Right. He just passed away several years ago.
Yes, one of the great pioneer, yeah. Mm-hmm. And your father also had that reputation. He, When I think of your father, I think of school construction. Right. Is that, am I correct?
Bread and butter work of our firm over the years, right? Uh-huh. Public schools.
And he evidently was successful in working with the school boards,
right,
hospital groups,
right,
and it does take a particular kind of architect, a particular kind of executive, to, I guess, get the business.
Oh, yes.
To go to the field and sell a concept.
Yeah. Well, my father was noted for getting projects, so to speak. He had a way with meeting with boards of education and school superintendents.
What kind of a technique did he use? Did you ever accompany him, go out with him, and watch him operate?
Well, when I joined the firm, after being in the service twice and having 2 degrees, I mean, I was older, heard a lot of stories, but I can give you one example. Shortly after I joined the firm in Moorhead and Fargo in 1955, I went with him one night going to a school board meeting. Now, this was a project he had. We already had. We were going to meet with the school board to go over plans. But just to show you, and we were driving down this gravel road. I think we were heading, if I recall, to Enderlin. And the car ahead of us was, of course, kicking up a lot of dust and driving what I thought was comparatively slow, so I wanted to pass it so I wouldn't have to eat the dust. And I started to pass it. My dad said, "No, don't do it. It could be the president of the school board. You don't know." And I said, "No, I don't." So we drove behind it, and sure enough, it wasn't the president of the school board, but it was a school board member. So we ate his dust. We didn't want him to eat. My dad didn't want him to eat our dust.
Well, that's an interesting story because it shows how always thinking and always considering the his job opportunities.
Yeah. And he didn't know who it was, because we didn't recognize the car or anything. But we found out after we got there, of course.
He employed a great many draftsmen and a great many idea people, in addition to engineers, civil engineers like himself.
Yes. I think if you went around in Fargo and Moorhead, you'd find that most of the firms, the men in it or the men that own the firms, started with our firm or worked with my dad at one time or another after World War II. I could rattle off probably 12, 15 names if I could think of them all real fast. So,
did he have a particular idea or concept about architecture in the prairie country? Was he an exponent of any kind of school of and when I say school, I mean,
I know what you mean.
I mean a concept.
Yeah. Well, it's difficult for me to say because I'm not an architect. I know back in his early days when he did a lot of designing. I'm talking about what I've read, about our firm in the 20s, the Louis Sullivan effect or the type of architecture that a lot of the buildings he did in the Twin Cities area, because our firm was at that time, or his firm was in Twin Cities. But actually, since I've been in the firm, and while my father was heading the firm, he didn't really do too much design. I mean, he supervised, but the younger men in the firm did the, like where my brother or Bob Ingalls did, they were the main designers, so to speak, or the design architects of our projects. We always kidded about my dad that he only sharpened his pencil once every 6 months, whether it needed it or not. In other words, that's a kind of a funny way of putting that he didn't do. But if you understand, in his position, getting work, supervising, at the time until I took over the administrative part, he did all the billing, secretary. So, but actually, down on the boards designing, his was more of a supervisory type of role. Although busy in long hours, but. And he also did the meeting with the clients,
He certainly was able, on the basis of his experience, to push a pencil,
right.
And he could.
The 20s, when you realize that my father practiced before 1920, whatever you call that, and in the 20s, the 30s, the 40s, the 50s, the 60s, and in the 70s he retired, but from our firm, but he just couldn't. He still designed a few buildings, and then when he retired to Arizona, 1979 approximately, he still did some small practice down there.
That's
a span of over 50 years.
That's an extraordinary history when you think of it.
Right.
Can you name any buildings that people would be familiar with, either in the Twin Cities or in any of the areas closer?
Closer, I mean, to read the Twin Cities ones, you know, most of them are probably gone or remodeled, although in the history that, as you may or may not know, when we were had a company newsletter, Mr. Murray from Moorhead State University, who has now passed away, Byron Murray, did a series of four articles over four of I'll just show them. In fact, I'll give them to you if you want to read them sometime. Series of articles on the history of our firm, and so in there they talk about some of the buildings done back in Minneapolis that are still existing. But I think here, and again, these were buildings that he was the president of the firm, again in a supervisory or management role. All kinds of buildings on the Moorhead State University campus. The Clay County Courthouse, the Cass Clay Creamery, both the one in Moorhead that isn't the creamery anymore that he designed in 1938, and then when the Cass Clay Creamery moved over to Fargo in about 55, the Cass Clay Creamery in Fargo, both projects he did for Charlie Ahmet, if you remember, was the longtime manager of the Cass Clay Creamery. A number of church projects in both cities. We've done many projects at St. Luke's Hospital, again, where my brother was primarily the architectural designer, but my father was head of the firm and supervision. The Moorhead Junior High Schools, which are now middle schools, about 8 elementary schools in Moorhead. The Moorhead Senior High School, completed in 1965. Again, he in a supervisory role. Bob Engelstad was actually the firm member that designed that project. Several projects at Concordia. So I can just, like I say, just go on and on.
He also was able to be retained for jobs in Middle North Dakota, Western North Dakota.
He had
a very wide area, you might say.
When he moved up the firm from Minneapolis to Fergus Falls in 1928, his dream was to have a larger firm that practiced in a great area, a large area. And I can remember going up to War Road, Minnesota, with him in the dead of winter, I might point out. I can remember going down to still around Minneapolis area. Courthouse out in North Dakota between Devil's Lake and mine at Lakota. I forget the county, but of course several schools out in North Dakota. So he did practice in a very wide area. Those are the four issues of our newsletter, that Dr. Murray wrote.
Did you go to Fargo grade schools?
I was raised in Fergus Falls.
In Fergus Falls.
So elementary and high school in Fergus Falls.
But you decided on University of North Dakota.
Well, that kind of happened. I was in the service after graduating high school in 1945. And, of course, when you grew up in Minnesota, all you thought about was going to the University of Minnesota. I always followed the Golden Gophers football team and had played some football and was in athletics in the Army. And I came back and was actually enrolled at University of Minnesota in 1947 when some of my friends also got out of the service and said, no, come on with us. We're going to the University of North Dakota. Buzz Elliott and Don Perkins were the two I'm thinking of. So I went up to University of North Dakota because I had two friends going there. And I never really known anything about the school.
You founded that was to your liking, obviously. And
oh, yes, I stayed, got a degree, and was a walk-on the football team, and ended up participating in that. I met my wife there. Again, went in the service during the Korean War and came back to get a master's degree in civil engineering. So, and I've been on the alumni board since 1963, so that's 25 years of service after going to school there. I'm presently the one of the two alumni board members on the Athletic Board of Control. But I've been involved with the Alumni Association, like I say, as a director and a member of the athletic board for 25 years. So I guess my answer is yes, with a capital Y and a capital E and a capital yes.
Tell me about your wife and family.
My wife just passed away June 21st, 1987. Her hometown was Mohall, North Dakota. We met at the University of North Dakota. She was quite a songstress. sang with the dance band at at the university. Had tryouts in 1950 in Minneapolis, the Cedric Adams show, I'm trying to think of, and another television person. And then we got married, and so her career then was raising a family. We had seven children, a boy, and then five girls, and a boy again. And of those seven, six attended the University of North Dakota, five graduated. My oldest daughter, who's in the arts, left after 1 year and ended up getting her degree first from the Columbia College in Chicago, a college that all the instructors are people in television and radio. Then she went to New York University and went a three-year program to get her master's degree in fine arts. And my youngest son is the only one that didn't go to the University of North Dakota. He's presently a senior at Gustavus Adolphus in St. Peter, Minnesota, and wants to be a tennis coach in a, or a tennis pro, and he's under one of the finest tennis coaches in the United States there right now.
Any of your other sons interested in architecture?
No, that's a good question. My oldest son is is an attorney in Bismarck with Basin Electric Corporation. He was just in charge of doing all the work getting the ANG gasification plant that they're going to sign the papers. I'm going there after this interview today and to sign the papers, I think, tomorrow or Saturday. And his wife is also an attorney. Then my oldest daughter is the one that went to New York University. She's an independent film operator. Her husband's films movies and so forth. My next oldest daughter is a banker in Hopkins, Minnesota. Next to his daughters with the higher education, she's in graphics and marketing in St. Paul. Next to his daughters, a Northwest Airline reservationist in Minneapolis. My youngest daughter is a marketing director for a shopping center in Minneapolis, the Calhoun Square. And as I said, my youngest son is senior at Gustavus.
Very interesting.
So none of them, they saw the long hours involved. I guess my oldest daughter was the one that I thought could very easily be a, could have ended up being an architect. But when she was a sophomore in South High School in Fargo, she started going through the Morehead State University summer theater play for students. She'd come over here at 8 in the morning, get home at midnight, and got her love in that. That's what she wanted to do. So, straw hat player, excuse me, I started to say. And
with all these ties and all these connections in the Northwest and the Upper Midwest, what's your view of this part of the country? What about its future? What are you? You've obviously a great stake in this part of our yeah. nation.
Well, great country! I'm just glad that I had the opportunity to. Be brought up here. As far as the future, of course, agriculture, and I think anybody knows that that's the main, but we do have to get, and as you're reading about all the time, have continued economic development in other fields, manufacturing and so forth. We're losing so many, I forget just what the percentage is of graduates from our colleges and universities that leave this part of the country, but and you can't blame them. All of mine have left, although going to Forum in Minneapolis isn't too far. And went, well, no, not all of mine. My son in Bismarck, excuse me. But by having some other types of industries and business besides agriculture, we'll keep more of those people here. And I don't have the exact solution, but I know there's a lot of people concerned with the economic development of our area, and I'm talking not just Fargo, but the Red River Valley area and North Dakota in general.
During the Great Depression, I'm speaking of the one, you know, in the 30s, so-called Dirty 30s, your father must have suffered a loss in construction and business. And how did he manage?
Well, I was only a few years old then, but he's told me one year he took in a total of $500. And you know how far that would go today. So it was rough. In all those years, he was in Fergus Falls. But again, by the fact that he branched out to, you know, I can remember as a kid that he was gone many, many nights, because when you're up at War Road or out to Lakota, North Dakota, or just where, you're gone for 2-3 days that time. And so that's how he really maintained the firm going, by not just trying to get work locally, so to speak. Hours didn't mean anything to him. In fact, when I gave the eulogy at my father's funeral earlier this year, I said how I'd come down the office the night after he passed away in Arizona, and I started thinking that I should do this, that I should give the eulogy, and I said it was easy to think about him at the office because that's where he spent the majority of his life.
What was the date of his death?
January 24th, 1988. And there was a service down in Arizona, of course, and a service here in Moorhead.
And he was how old then?
91.
He was 91.
Right.
And while he was retired, at least semi-retired, he did maintain, I suppose, a continuing interest in the companies here. And
oh, yes. His last 3 years were bad years for his health. He was basically hospitalized or nursing home one of the things he always asked, because this is what, in the last years he was in the firm, his main role was to bring in work, so he'd always, he'd call me or say, well, do you get any what new work have you got? It's always, what's the new work, you know, not what have you completed or that, because he knew that you always had to bring in work to keep going. And that's one thing about an architectural engineering office. You can't rely what you got on the boards. You got to have the so-called backlog. So that's my job. It has been my job for a number of years, and that's what his job was his last few years with the firm.
There have been so many changes in the profession, and I'm thinking of approaches to architectural treatment. I'm thinking of the many new materials. Almost completely changed, I suppose, since the days when your father started.
Oh, yes. It's that's, again, when I mentioned earlier about how he practiced in the 20s and the 30s and all the way up to the 70s and partly into the 80s. You just imagine what the changes he saw, the state of the art of the various... and he always tried to keep up with it. I know when I came in the firm in 1955, I had written my master's degree thesis on the lift slab method of construction. I won't go into details explaining it, but he was very, very, you know, very much wanted me to start using that because he thought it was something special, and it's a structural system, not an architectural treatment, although it certainly affects the architectural treatment. And we ended up using it primarily in dormitories and repeat floors type apartments. A number of the dormitories at Moorhead State, American Bethany home, the first retirement home we did there, is a 6-story lift slab project. The apartment building initially was built and owned by Twin City Construction, built down on South 7th Street, was a lift slab, and I suppose 5 or 6 dormitories, the tall ones, the repeat, some of the ones that even were 3-4 floors at Moorhead State. But that's just an example that he always wanted. And in the architectural field, you have to be careful when if you want to use something new that hasn't been tested. You know, some architects say they wouldn't try a new material till it's been out and used in buildings for 10 years. And that's probably the conservative way to do it. But so when new products and new systems, like the structural system I was talking about, if you really researched, knew that it was going to be okay, then you know, he was one that always wanted to use them. Particularly roofing systems, you really have to be careful about using a roofing system that hasn't been, particularly up in this part of the country where you go from 40 below to 110 above. You don't want to try new roofing systems unless you know they're going to work. But he was always ready to try new things. I know particularly, like I say, because of not the pressure he put on me, but encouragement would be the word to use the lift slab system. And we did. We used it right away. And, of course, I just finished writing a thesis on, so it was fresh in my mind also.
He was not one to turn away from a new idea that
absolutely
that
not.
Seemed to be speedy and still efficient and effective. Right.
Particularly if it was cost-saving, because that's one of the big difficulties in designing and keeping within your client's budget. You know, he was always, if it was a cost-saving feature, he was very interested in trying out that. If I could remember the names of some of these particular products, but I just know I can remember over the years. I'm thinking of the Minnewaukan School. I'm thinking of a fire station in Fargo, where he always wanted to try new examples of where he tried new things.
I think my impression going around the country is that the architects and builders in this part of the nation have a remarkable reputation. People finding out, for example, where my wife and I were from when we visited, would indicate our interest, you know, architecturally in that profession, and they were always remarked, I think, about the effectiveness, about the honesty and the progressive methods that the profession has in this part of the country. We seem to build roads, and we seem to build buildings, and we seem to construct faster than other parts of the nation, and they seem to be good. Well, for the past few minutes, we've been visiting with Mark Foss, the Foss Organization, a name that in this part of the nation is well known. And we also visited about Magnus Foss, Mark's father, one of the truly pioneers, probably, I think it's fair to say, of the profession in this part of the nation. He was honored. As his years went on, he was received a great many honors for his work, and he also had a reputation among the engineers, as the superintendents, as you say, Mark, and the school boards and the hospital groups that were spending public monies and wanting good results. It's been a pleasure to visit with you about your father and about your profession, Mark, and I thank you very much for the time.
It's fun talking with you, Jim.